Welcome into another edition of Huddle Up. JP Shadrick with Bucky Brooks. John Osier out on vacation this week. We've got a busy show here on this March 20th, this Wednesday. It's pro day season. We'll get to that coming up. Of course, the Jaguars were very busy the last week or so in free agency. And a lot to get to, Bucky. So here we are. This is the midst of it. Free agency is open. The new league year is here. Pro day season now, and we are closing in a little over a month away from the draft. What's up?
Okay, JP. So I'm kind of new to this. Like, I've only been associated with the National Football League for about 20 years.
That's it.
And this is the first time that I've ever heard of someone being on vacation in the middle of like free agency and the draft leading up. Like, the league year just popped, and here we got Osier's on vacation. Like,
that generation, this new generation is a little different. Like, they just take vacation days and stuff like that.
I just got to figure out what that's about. How do you take vacation? The league year just started.
I will say this, though. They're still writing on Jaguars.com, so he's still contributing to the website.
Oh, okay.
Which is, he's not disappeared, He's just not on here.
Okay. I was just saying vacation. Like, who does vacation? The league year just started. How are you going to have vacation? We just started.
We're just getting underway, right? There's a whole year to go. That's why they call it the new league year. So we'll get to pro day stuff coming up. I wanted to touch a little bit on some of these free agents the Jaguars have brought in here, of course. And I mean, the latest and probably one of the biggest names is Eric Armstead, defensive tackle, 10th-year player, the 17th overall pick back in 2015 by the Niners. And, of course, that team was led by GM Trent Baalke and reunited with Baalke here in Jacksonville. He came back to play the playoffs last year after injury and in the Super Bowl. He had a sack and six tackles, but played through a knee injury pretty much the second half of the season. And Armstead was asked about his health during his press conference.
I'm very confident. These past couple of years, I've had some random nagging things going on. Football is a sport with 100% injury rate. People want to talk about my past 2 years and, I missed four or five games last year, but I finished the playoffs. I played in the Super Bowl. And, these past 2 years, I hadn't missed a game in 5 years. So injuries are a part of sports. I have my plan together in place to make sure that I'm putting my body and myself in the best position to be out there for my team. And I'm going to do that. And, I think it's going to go very well. And, I plan to have a long career. I think I got a good 5 or 6 more years in me. So I don't plan on stopping anytime soon.
Bucky, Eric Armstead is 6'7", 290 pounds. So what will he bring to the table on the defense?
I think people need to kind of think about what Calais Campbell was for the Jaguars and how he impacted the game and kind of view Eric Armstead in that light. Different players in terms of position, but similar in terms of physicality, length, how they disrupt at the point of attack. He is something that the Jaguars desperately needed inside. When we talk about the defense and the defensive struggles last year, just didn't get enough output from the interior positions. The defensive tackles didn't create enough splash plays. I did the numbers, and you think about three guys that manned a position last year, Fatatasi, Devin Hamilton, and then Roy Robertson-Harrison. They combined for only 3.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss. That's not enough disruption on the interior. And so with Eric Armstead, you would like to think that he and Roy Robertson-Harris will kind of combine for more disruption. They'll be a bigger tandem to deal with on the inside. And I think that'll take some of the pressure off Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker to create all the splash plays for this defense. So I'm really excited about the move. I think it's definitely a huge upgrade. And when we think about the championship teams, they are built literally rock solid in the trenches. I think the Jaguars now have a defense that has the potential to be very, very solid in the trenches.
You think he's got, 3, 4, 5 more years left in him?
I mean, look, I can't worry about 4 or 5 years. I think he should have 2 to 3 at a minimum to be able to play at a high level. And then anything beyond that is gravy. But in the immediate future, he gives them an upgrade over what they had. It also takes some of the pressure off of the Jaguars to have to force the pick at number 17 to see if they can get a high-end guy. And I think that's really important. What you want
to do is you want to be able to go into the draft not worrying about, hey, I got to get this need and that need. I want to take the best player that is available at pick 17. Arik Armstead means that you don't have to necessarily rush it and force it with a Byron Murphy or Devondre Sweat, in any of those guys. You now can just, hey, I'm going to take the best player, whether it's a D lineman, a DB, a wide receiver, wherever that is, and then kind of move forward like that.
Bucky, let's stay in the trenches, but go to the other side now. And the Jaguars added center Mitch Morris, 10th-year player from the Buffalo Bills. He was open for signing before the league year. He was released by the Bills. So a second-round pick back in 2015 by the Chiefs. Was with the Bills from 19 through 23 and a Pro Bowler in 2022. And visited with Jags reporter Kai Stevens on his first day in the building explaining his free agency process.
Well, it's been a wild 96 hours. We were talking to my wife. She's been a trooper this whole thing. Yeah, you get released and then you're able to kind of start ahead of the free agency process, which in my case as an older guy was nicer. We knew that we wanted to go somewhere that had a winning culture. No Doug from my first few years in the league, and you need a quarterback in this league to win, and Trevor is that guy. And so when I had the opportunity to come here and visit, fell in love, really liked what they got going on, had some really nice conversations with Trent as well as Phil, and it worked out, and we couldn't be happier, and my wife and I are elated to bring our kids and show them the Jacksonville area.
That's Mitch Morris, of course, the Jaguars center now, and so that all of a sudden the Jags offensive line, Bucky, filled with salty veterans from the left tackle all the way to the right guard. Those are guys that have played a lot of football in this league.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you see is the theme is it's about winning right now. The pressure's on the team to get over the top. You have to win more than 9 games. You got to get to the 11 or 12 win mark to be able to really do some damage in the postseason. And the only way you can do that is you got to control the line of scrimmage. It wasn't good enough last year. Too many situations where you couldn't convert on 3rd and short, 4th and short, and that is the offensive line, no matter how you slice it. And so now you bring in Mitch Morse, who is a veteran guy. He can not only lighten some of the load on Trevor when it comes to protection calls, but look, a physical guy, nasty guy who's going to add to the nasty element that we see up front. So now when you look at the team from left to right, Cam Robinson, Ezra Cleveland, Morris, if he's in the starting role, Brandon Scherff, who's, even though he's declining, he still has that nastiness, and then Anton Harrison. Like, you have a solid offensive line that can be able to get it done. And if anything, you point to Brandon Scherff, who has been a Pro Bowl player multiple times. You can point to him as maybe the weak link on that offensive line. I think there are a lot of teams that would be okay with taking that kind of offensive line into the season.
And in the swing spots, theoretically, you have guys that you know. I mean, you know what Walker Little is, and all of a sudden Luke Fortner's been your starter for a year or two already. So is that Fortner's future? Is just kind of a swing backup, interior guy?
Yeah, look, man, I think his future, like, now what happens is he, like so many guys who spend most of their life kind of backing up and trying to carve out a lengthy career, he has to look and see what happens on draft night. Does another player come in that can be a swing player, that can play guard and center? Does it become very competitive for him to be one of those rotation players? I think the one thing that we knew going into next year, he was going to have to play better. And whatever role that he was thrust in, he was going to have to improve upon what he's displayed the first 2 years of his career. He knows it. Everyone knows it. He now has to get to work and be a better player. And if he works his tail off and he plays at a higher level, then he'll be around and he'll carve out a nice role for himself, whether as a swing player or if he somehow finds a way to supplant Mitch Morris as the starter.
JP Shadrick with Bucky Brooks. It's the Huddle Up podcast. Let's move now to wide receiver Gabe Davis, 5th-year player, 4th-round pick of the Bills out of Central Florida back in 2020. And, of course, reunited with his old position coach from Buffalo, Chad Hall. 27 career touchdowns, 3 different seasons now with 7 touchdowns in a single year. But a couple big playoff games increased the spotlight for him, especially that divisional round game after the 2021 season at Kansas City. That was the game that changed the overtime rules, of course. He had 8 catches, 201 yards, and 4 touchdowns in that game. And he earlier discussed the decision to come to the Jaguars during that negotiation period leading in to the start of the league year.
As soon as 12 o'clock hit, it all just started going and going. And as soon as I heard Jacksonville, I was like, thank God they called. I wanted to come back to Florida. I wanted to be around, you know, guys that I knew, you know, coach that I loved, and, you know, the team's great. Shoot, we could never beat them. You know what I mean? So came here, and, you know, soon as they sent it in, you know, negotiations went, and then boom, I was like, yeah, I'm a Jaguar, man. Pretty easy decision.
All right, so Gabe Davis is all in. Ridley is out, so some changes certainly in this wide receiver core for Trevor Lawrence and Press Taylor and Doug Peterson. And what will Gabe Davis add to this group? And, you know, is he the one to add everything that Ridley will not be providing to the Jaguars this year?
No, and I'm going to say this, and because I think a lot of people that know me know that, like, I have an affinity for Calvin Ridley, mm-hmm. having known him, and Christian Kirk and some of these guys from high school. Like, I just really love what he's been able to do as a pro. And he is a talented player. He is a guy who will go to Tennessee and have an opportunity to kind of fulfill some of the things that he wanted to do as a number one and number two receiver. That said, I think this actually can be a good thing for the Jacksonville Jaguars to move on from Ridley and to bring Gabe Davis in. Sometimes when you're putting together a team, it's not necessarily the most talented team that gets it done. It's how the pieces of the puzzle fit. The puzzle pieces may fit better with Gabe Davis coming in, joining Christian Kirk, Evan Engram, and Zay Jones. And it's not about having what I would say like a designated number one, but having people that can occupy designated roles. And Gabe Davis, what you're getting is a big play specialist, a guy who has averaged over 16 yards per catch throughout his career. You talked about the 27 touchdowns that he has. But when you average 16 yards per catch,
it's a lot.
Over the course of a career,
yeah.
That's a lot of big explosive plays. And I think people have to understand explosive plays are categorized as passes over 20 yards. He has been able to do that time and time again throughout his career. And as you're looking at the receiver core now in whole, Kirk and Engram do the dirty work over the middle of the field. They are the chain movers. They kind of make it happen in a pinch. Zay Jones is kind of like the complimentary piece that he can win the one-on-ones, but he allows them to be able to be very interchangeable and play musical chairs because it's a high IQ unit. And Gabe Davis, the part that has been missing in this offense has been the vertical element where everyone is clamping down on the intermediate routes. And so Trevor's like, hey, I got someone over the top. Gabe Davis gives them that. And for Trevor's first 3 years in the league, he hasn't had that vertical threat. So I'm excited to see how this is. I don't know if we'll talk about, like, last year we were optimistic about, oh, we're going to have all these 1,000-yard receivers and those things. It may not be that, but you'll judge Gabe Davis on yards per catch and number of touchdowns. Christian Kirk and Evan Engram would continue to be the number one and number two, however that goes. And then Zay Jones just kind of fills in as a designated chain mover. It's a unit that is probably more balanced in terms of their skill set, and it won't be the pressure to feel like you have to force feed it to anybody. I think the ball would just go to the open man, and I think everybody involved in the core is okay with that.
They're going to draft a receiver, though, and where would that, depending on where he's drafted, where would he fit into that equation?
I don't think you need to draft one in the first round. I think history has shown that you can get a good receiver in the second and third round.
Especially this year, right, because of the depth of the class. There's good receivers, and we've talked about this, I think, on this show before. This could be the trend moving ahead. So the way the game's played in college now, receivers everywhere.
There are receivers everywhere. The thing that I would look for is I would look for someone who is comparable to what Zay Jones is. Zay Jones has dealt with some injuries. Zay Jones, I can't even say he's an older player, but if I'm looking for a receiver, I want someone with that kind of skill set. I want a polished route runner. I want someone that can make things happen, throwing out some names. Like, look, he might be a first-round pick, but maybe not. Like, a guy like Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, those guys to me would be great fits in Jacksonville's offense. It's an offense that needs a route runner that can consistently get open and kind of play a role. I think those guys can play a role. I don't know if you need like a Keenan Coleman from Florida State. I don't think they need that. I think they need a polished route runner that can do it. Luke McCaffrey from Rice, day 2, day 3, someone that can come in and do that. I would think it would be a player more like that than someone that is kind of like a marquee name that has been hailed as someone that's going to come off the board in the first round. I don't think that's necessarily necessary. I don't think that's a necessary thing.
And you're not necessarily worried about size of this receiver, just if they can run the correct route and be in the right place. Because Ladd McConkey's, what, 6 foot, 185 maybe, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, 6 foot, 185. Ricky Pearsall's in that same mold. Yeah, look, A.D. Mitchell can do some of those things. I just want a good route runner. I think that the two things that you're looking for in this position, I think it's what Doug has talked about, like going all the way back to when Doug and I were together in Green Bay. If you have a high-level quarterback, you can get away with B-plus receivers, meaning guys that are great route runners, guys that are dependable and reliable, and guys that have high football IQs. That is what I'm looking for if they bring someone in the draft, route runner, dependable hands, who has a high IQ so he can move around. Because in a perfect world, this offense is one where everyone can line up anywhere, and you dictate where they line up based on matchups and those things.
All right, plenty of free agent coverage, of course, from the last week or so at Jaguars.com. Free website. Check it out. We're back in a moment. It's Pro Day season, and our man Bucky is on the scene. That's after this. Welcome back. It's the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick with Bucky Brooks, and the Jaguars are celebrating their 30th season. The time to get your 2024 season ticket membership is right now. Be at the bank for every touchdown and secure your seats at jaguars.com/tickets or call 904-633-2000. Pro Day season. As of the recording of this podcast on Wednesday, March 20th, you're about to go cover what? The Southern California Pro Day? Is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Like, so right now at NFL Network, we are all about the quarterbacks. And so over the next week, we're going to look at Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels, respectively. So Caleb Williams is up. He has his Pro Day on Wednesday. So today we get a chance to see him.
What does he need to show? What does he need to show, Bucky?
I want to see the spectacular stuff. I want to see why people are talking about him as a generational talent. So if we talk about generational talent, you should be not only elite, but you have to be elite plus, meaning that you have a superpower that separates you from some of the other guys. It's very similar to when people were looking at Trevor Lawrence, and Trevor Lawrence was coming out, and they're talking about how special he was and what you wanted to see from a guy who was celebrated as the top-rated prospect that we've seen since Andrew Luck. Well, Caleb Williams is in that category based on what people are saying. I don't necessarily see him in the same light, but I do think he's a really good player. I want to see him dazzle. And for him, what are his dazzling traits? Because they moved off of Justin Fields, who is an outstanding runner and playmaker. So Caleb Williams has to have that plus some. Let's see what that arm looks like. Let's see if he can spin it. He's going to make all these crazy off-platform throws and those things, but when you watch the workout, you could feel his specialness just by the way the ball is thrown, the accuracy and those things. Let's see if he lives up to some of the hype, even though it's a workout without a defense on the field. Hey, this should be one where it's layup line drill. It should be nice. It should be Steph Curry. I want to see Steph Curry warming up. That's what I want to see because that's how he celebrated.
I love that. There's got to be a load limit on how many generational quarterbacks there are in a certain time period, right?
I mean, I think if a generation is anywhere from 15 to 20 years, I don't think you can have five or six in a generation and say they're a generational talent. I think we have to be careful with how we loosely apply those terms. He's a really good prospect. But we've seen, JP, last two, three years, like, and since Trevor Lawrence's draft, he and Brock Purdy are the only quarterbacks. There have been 19 quarterbacks drafted. He and Brock Purdy are the only two guys that are expected to start going into next year. So when we talk about all of these quarterbacks and how great this class is, how great that guy is, the odds suggest that they're not nearly as great as we talk about. So we need to see if we can uncover and see what makes him different than the majority of the quarterbacks that have entered the league in the last 2 to 3 years.
Is that part of the – I mean, that's part of the full 11-month a year we've got to pump every single thing up off-season process in the NFL now, right? I mean, this is the pre-draft mm-hmm. thing where you hype and hype and hype, and then the draft happens, and everything is expected from these guys all of a sudden. They may not live up mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah, no. Look, man, look. I'll take some of the blame. We do a great job of selling the TV show that is the NFL draft.
Absolutely.
We talk about these guys ad nauseum. We look at a college game, and we hear people affixing first-round grades to people, and we don't even know who's going to be in the draft yet. But we've talked about these guys and we celebrate them. And you know, there's something that the league is going to have to look at. Either we have an evaluation problem or we have a developmental problem. Why can't we evaluate the quarterback position? And when we do select a quarterback high, why can't we develop them where they play close to the expectation that we put on them when they're coming out? There's something to that. And I'll say this, and I think it's a tip of the cap to Doug Peterson. A lot of coaches have to have more flexibility and adaptability when it comes to dealing with the quarterbacks that high school and college are producing. They're not going to be like yesteryear's quarterback where they can control the game from the line of scrimmage and they have all of these things. It's a little more subjective because everyone is in the spread offense. So as a coach, what do you have in your bag to maximize the talent that the quarterback brings to the table while minimizing his flaws? I think it's more of a coach issue than a player issue. Everyone in the league has to kind of reevaluate how they're developing and managing quarterbacks and see if they can come up with a plan that allows them to be at their best.
All right, so pro day season, Southern California, I think Ohio State is Wednesday as well, though the wide receiver is not running the 40. They might do some things. Who knows? What else is coming up this week in pro day land?
Well, no, I mean, that's the major thing. But, like, we can talk about all these skill guys and Marvin Harrison Jr. and all the wide receivers that everyone is excited about. But, you know, even though the Jaguars don't need a quarterback, the league is talking about quarterbacks and what's going on. And so talk about Caleb Williams this week, Jaden Daniels, Drake May next week. At some point we see J.J. McCarthy go. And do we have four guys that are worthy of going in the top five? Do we have another quarterback that sneaks into the first round like a Michael Penix or Bo Nix? Those are the conversations. The pro day workout won't make or break whether those guys become first rounders, but they certainly would give us enough conversation. They'd give us the buzz where we talk about those guys being worthy of consideration in the first round.
All right, Bucky Brooks, JP Shadrick, it's Huddle Up. Final couple moments with you here. And you touched on this earlier. You know, with some of these free agent signings, you said that the Jaguars are more poised now to be able to pick a best available type of player at 17 overall. So how about this scenario for you? Are you still leaning towards a cornerback no matter what there? Or, hey, let's say Georgia tight end Brock Bowers is available at 17, and he's the best guy on your board. Are you taking another tight end? Is that truly the best available?
Look at you. I mean, look at what you're doing. I mean, you're talking about the home of what used to be known as the world's largest cocktail party. You talk about bringing someone who has been revered in that area to be able to bring him, put him in that thing. And, you know, I mean, we're not even talking about tickets. We're just talking about a dynamic player. Look, Brock Bowers would be a great addition given what Doug Peterson has done, but can we take a tight end in the first round after taking one last year in the second round that we didn't really get on the field?
Right. And signing the pick. Yeah, right. If you're truly best available and he's the best guy on your board.
Yeah, you got to have that conversation. But typically what happens in these things when you get to your board and best player available, it tends to align with the best player available, just so happens to fit the biggest need. I would think that I think multiple cornerbacks are going to be in play this year early in the draft. Given the new system that's coming in, Ryan Nelson coming in, they want to play more man-to-man. I think Ron Darby let the cat out of the bag. Hey, I'm a man-to-man corner. I want to go somewhere where I can play man-to-man. Oh, okay, I guess we're about to be a lot of man-to-man. Well, if that's the case, you need to make sure that you have a lot of guys, because not only does man-to-man require a different skill set, it requires depth, because that is a lot of running across the field. You got to make sure that you're really good in that area. I would look for the Jaguars to heavily scout the position in the first round and also come back later and see if you get another player that you can add to the mix, because you got to have someone not only behind Ronald Darby, but you need to have someone as insurance for Tyson Campbell. I just want to make sure that you have enough players that can go nose-to-nose and play the style that they want to play.
You still have to draft that second guy relatively high, right? I mean, you can't – the Jags have had late-round, sixth-, seventh-round corners that are deep guys. You got to have a guy that can play, right?
And this is a great draft to go and get corners. It's a great draft to go and find those guys. Yeah, I want to go high. I don't want to mess around. I'm not looking – like bargain basement shopping. I want to make sure that you get someone that can play. And in the first three rounds, you can find guys that can play. Also, you got to figure out what are you doing with Antonio Johnson in terms of what role is he going to play. He can be that star position, which is really called that nickel defender. But there are going to be times where that nickel defender needs to be your true cover man. Do you go and find another cover corner that can play in nickel, like the little kid from Michigan, Sandstrill? Do you go and get a Max Melton from Rutgers? Those things. Like, there's some intriguing names that could kind of be floated around. But it's a great draft for cornerbacks, so I'm excited to see how it plays out.
All right, corners for Bucky. It seems to be somewhat of a consensus. That wide receiver is creeping back in there, too, but we'll see what happens. We got about a month to discuss, Bucky. Enjoy the Pro Day week and Caleb Williams' performance on Wednesday. We'll look forward to your analysis of it.
Man, it should be fun, man. Looking forward to it.
Always good to see you. That's Bucky Brooks, J.P. Shadricker. Thanks to Joe Fortunato and Brent Reber. Coming up, Jaguars Happy Hour Radio tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Kai Stevens in again this week with Jeff Lagerman. The league meetings are next week, 24th through 27th. The offseason program, April 15th, and then the draft, of course, in late April. That will do it for this week's edition of Huddle Up.